Hello, and welcome to Season 4 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. I'm your host, Kasia Zabrowska-Traubin, a patent attorney and fashion enthusiast based in Los Angeles, California. Join me as I break down legal cases, discuss recent fashion news, and demystify patent law. Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 10 of season 4 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. I have a great episode for you guys today, and I know I always say that, but I really do. This one is especially dedicated for all my shoe lover listeners. I'll be discussing the fashion house of Christian Louboutin. Louboutin is, of course, best known for his high-end red-soled shoes, but there's actually a lot more to the fashion house than just shoes. Mr. Louboutin really made an empire from those initial shoe designs years ago. And it's also a relatively new fashion house, as it was established in the early 1990s. So it doesn't have decades and decades of history like some of the other fashion houses that I've discussed on this podcast series, like Louis Vuitton or Chanel, for example. Also, one of my favorite songs by Jennifer Lopez. She is one of his many fans, and she actually has a whole song dedicated to the Christian Louboutin shoes, and she named her song Louboutins. So I'm going to play you guys a short clip. It's such a good song. She's throwing on those Louboutins. Okay, so now let's start the episode officially with some history of Mr. Christian Louboutin. He was born in Paris, France in 1963, and according to Britannica.com, he was a teenage apprentice in the dressing rooms of the Folies Bergère, which is a legendary Parisian music hall and a cabaret. And Louboutin was really impressed at the time with the ability of the showgirls to remain balanced in their tall heels while wearing those huge headdresses that they wear in those Parisian cabarets. And that was back in the 1980s. And that's when he realized how much he was interested in footwear design. After that apprenticeship at the cabaret hall, he gained experience through various works for Paris shoe brand Charles Jordan with the master shoe designer Roger Vivier. And he ended up becoming Louboutin's mentor. And not to go off too much of a tangent, but I love Roger Vivier shoes also. I'm not sure. They're kind of a little more under the radar than Louboutin shoes. The flats with the big square buckles are the best and very comfortable if anybody's looking for a comfortable pair of flats. So back in 1992, Louboutin launched his own business in Paris, where he continued to use his boutique and design in his business headquarters. And that's when he developed the signature look of the bright red shoes. And as legend has it, he first started off by painting the sole of a shoe with red nail polish. That was kind of how the red sole began. And a typical pair of his luxury shoes have different colored leather, sometimes exotic skins, and they average about $800 a pair. The industry journal Footwear News noted that Louboutin's trademark red soles were, quote, a subtle status symbol and were more alluring than the kind of in-your-face branding that a lot of the luxury brands were doing at the time. Differing stories had been offered as for the origin of those colored soles, but I think the most common one is when he was inspired by his assistant's red nail polish and decided to use that on the soles. Christian Louboutin maintained a high profile on the international fashion scene, and he opened his European flagship boutiques in London, as well as stores in cities like Las Vegas, Paris, Singapore, Tokyo. I think in Los Angeles, we have two of his boutiques here, one on Rodeo Drive and a really small one in the Brentwood Country Mart. Oh, there might be one more in West Hollywood, too. I have never been to that one, though. He began expanding his brand, and in 2003, he launched a handbag line. And then after about 8-9 years, he began selling cosmetics, notably lipstick and nail polish. And then in 2016, he introduced several fragrances. Speaking of beauty sales in general, I've been reading that online beauty sales in general have dropped almost 20% in the U.S. since many customers are really enjoying returning to physical brick and mortar stores. I'm definitely part of that demographic. I have drastically stopped shopping compared to the pandemic days, but don't get me wrong, I'm still shopping. I'm just going in person now. I call it my podcast research. Anyway, according to Vogue Business, women's shoes still represent most of the share of the Louboutin business. He also has men's shoes at 31% and accessories make up 12%. The Spanish group Puig, P-U-I-G, owns the beauty license, which consists of nail polish, makeup, fragrances. And then transitioning to ready-to-wear is sometimes a challenge for primarily shoe designers, but it looks like Louboutin was able to make that jump, and he now has 150 stores, 450 points of sale, so that means that not only are Louboutin shoes sold in his boutiques, but they're also sold at various authorized retailers. Like, just off the top of my head, I know Neiman's carries them, some Nordstrom's do, Saks Fifth Avenue for sure, and Bergdorf Goodman in New York. The other big news for the fashion house came in March of 2021, where, according to the Wall Street Journal, Louboutin sold a 24% stake of his company to an investment firm called Exor, which is controlled by an Italian family with the last name Agnelli. And this was done in a deal that valued the Louboutin company at 2.3 billion euros, so equivalent to 2.73. This is back in 2021, though. So now, actually, the euro is a little bit weaker than the American dollar. So it'd be different now. And interestingly, this Exor company also owns Ferrari, the car company. Then in more recent news, at the beginning of July 2022nd, so just a few weeks ago, it was announced that Christian Louboutin, LVMH, have joined France's Comité Colbert as the newest members. Now, I had never heard of this Comité Colbert. It's like that just means Colbert Committee. This is basically a committee which promotes luxury, and it was started in 1954 by Jean-Jacques Guerlain of the Guerlain fragrance family, and it's made up of 81 members. And then upon doing a little bit of researching and digging, this is kind of a really interesting committee. And its quote on their website is Association to Promote Luxury, which is, of course, a French association. The French are synonymous with luxury. And the committee is divided into 13 various sectors, such as automobile, crystals, decoration, porcelain, fragrance, cosmetics, fashion, haute couture. Some other famous committee members consist of Chanel, Celine, Dior, and Gucci. And according to the ComitéColbert.com website, the committee is devoted to promoting the voice of French luxury. This is such an interesting concept to me. The French are really self-aware that their country is synonymous with luxury, and it's so fascinating that they've kind of come together cohesively and capitalized on that by using this committee to kind of get the word out about that. So you should check out Comité Colbert if you're interested.com. That's their website. Very interesting. I never heard of it like anything like that before. And I've never heard of anything like that, definitely in the U.S. I think L.A. should come up with something like this too, because we're kind of synonymous, especially Beverly Hills, with that luxury world. Very fascinating concept. And in other Louboutin news, if anybody is in Monaco this summer and you're a Louboutin fan, you should check out the large-scale exhibition of Christian Louboutin, which will be at the Grimaldi Forum in Monaco from July 9th to August 28th. And according to the official Christian Louboutin website, There's a lot of interesting information on there about the event and the fashion house in general. The website is very well organized, aesthetically pleasing, and I don't know if I've ever been on their website before. The few shoes I have from the fashion house, I think I purchased from Neiman Marcus. I don't remember ever purchasing them online. I get a little nervous purchasing shoes, especially online, because different designers run their sizing differently. Okay, now let's get into the legal discussion portion of the episode to set the stage for the lawsuit analysis that I will be providing after this. This will be the same intellectual property intro as usual. So if you're a regular listener and you've heard this before, just skip forward about 90 to 120 seconds. So first, let's talk about patents. And I will just give a quick definition of a patent. So a patent is a form of intellectual property that gives its owner the legal right to exclude others from making, using, or selling an invention for a limited period of years. And that is in exchange for publishing a public disclosure of the invention. This is where a patent attorney comes in to write the patent application for the inventor. And then the crux of a patent are the claims, and the claims define in technical terms the scope of protection conferred by a patent. So, in other words, the purpose of the claims is to really crystallize and define what subject matter is protected by the patent. And in the United States, there are three main types of patents. There's a utility patent, the kind of most common one when people think about patents, and this protects the way something works. A U.S. utility patent is generally valid for 20 years from its patent priority date. Then you have a design patent, which protects the ornamental nature of the item only. And then you have a third type of patent, kind of rare. It's called a plant patent. Definitely doesn't come up in the fashion context very often. Now, according to the United States Patent and Trademark Office patent search database, I looked up the Christian Louboutin Fashion House and found that they have just over 10 design patents. Most are for shoe designs, of course, but there are a few for beauty packaging consisting of a really unique lipstick case design. It kind of looks like a upside down arrow. I'm going to link that design patent to the episode notes on this episode if anybody would like to take the drawing of that. It's kind of interesting. And now let's switch gears a little and talk about trademarks. So the lawsuits I'll be discussing will be trademark centric. So you guys will get some background knowledge here if you don't already know what a trademark is legally defined as. So it's a symbol, word, or words that are legally registered or established by use as representing a company or a product. You have two types. You can have a word mark, or some people call it a character mark, and a logo mark. The word mark protects the actual word or the brand name of the company or product. So here, in this situation, it would be Christian Louboutin. And then you have a logo. So in this case, it would be that kind of stylized cursive way that Christian Louboutin writes his brand name. And this brings us to a really interesting question in trademark law. Can you trademark your own name? Because as we know, Mr. Christian Louboutin is a real living person. This is not some sort of pseudonym fake name. And he was able, in fact, to register his name with various products on the USPTO register. Shoes, fragrances, lots of different things that he sells. So it's kind of a complicated answer to this. Lexology.com, I found, had a really good explanation, which explains it in a pretty comprehensive way. So I'll just kind of reiterate that here. So basically, it is pretty difficult to clear and register a personal name as a trademark. These marks pose obstacles that even though the designer may plan to use the name only in combination with elements such as their surname, but a mark can be refused under the Lanham Act, which controls trademark law in the U.S., a mark that is, quote, primarily merely a surname is not federally registrable without proof of secondary meaning. And secondary meaning is something that requires a showing that in the minds of relevant consumers, that surname indicates the source of goods or services immediately. So it just has to be, in layman's terms, kind of like famous. You know, you think about Coca-Cola. You hear the name, you immediately think of what Coca-Cola is. And there's a test to whether a trademark is primarily merely a surname. Various factors. There's 5 factors. I won't go through them all, but some of them are whether the term is a rare surname, whether the term is the surname of anyone connected with the applicant, and whether the term has the look and feel of a surname. This is a pretty subjective test. However, Christian Louboutin was, of course, able to overcome all these obstacles. And if the designer's surname was already well known and an extensive amount of resources have been allocated to promote that mark, then the designer may consider making a claim of acquired distinctiveness to show that the mark has a secondary meaning. And Mr. Louboutin has, like I said, many trademarks in his personal name. The first one dates back to 1992. Now we are ready to go into the legal discussion of the famous Red Sole lawsuits, which have been at the center of many trademark-centric lawsuits in courts all over the world. I'll focus on the most famous one, the US-based one, of Christian Louboutin versus Yves Saint Laurent. Then I'll give a quick rundown of some of the other international cases. So here we go for the infamous case of Louboutin versus Yves Saint Laurent, and this was back when Yves Saint Laurent had the Yves. Now, of course, it's just Saint Laurent. If you guys want to hear the whole backstory on that name change, check out my episode titled Ain't Laurent Without Yves. Before I get into that case, just real quick on a side note, this is going to concern a 2008 trademark that the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office granted Mr. Christian Louboutin, a trademark on its lacquered red sole on footwear, which the court refers to as, quote, red sole mark. So this landmark case begins back in April of 2011 when Mr. Louboutin filed a lawsuit against Yves Saint Laurent for selling a shoe with a red sole. So just before bringing suit, Louboutin allegedly found out that Saint Laurent was selling a shoe which had one shoe which was entirely red, and this is kind of what prompted the lawsuit. The top was red, the heel, insole, bottom, everything was red. Plaintiff Louboutin sought a preliminary injunction against Saint Laurent for the alleged infringement of the trademark consisted of the red lacquered sole on a high heel fashion women's shoe. So Louboutin saw the shoe, obviously they weren't happy, filed the lawsuit, and in addition to trademark infringement, they also sued for dilution, unfair competition claims in the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York, where all the high fashion cases get filed. And they also sought a preliminary injunction to bar Yves Saint Laurent from selling the shoes and from any kind of marketing. And this is all, again, related to that monochrome red shoe that Yves Saint Laurent was selling. So in response, Louboutin counterclaimed, alleging the red sole mark was merely ornamental and functional, and tried to cancel the mark. District Court found that Louboutin's mark was likely not enforceable, and the judge in that case said that since one-color trademarks are inherently functional, they can't be a form of a protectable trademark. The judge also added, and I'm quoting here, allowing one artist or designer to appropriate an entire color would unduly hinder not just commerce and competition, but art as well. And now here's a side note. There's a case that kind of is related to this. It's called Qualitex Co. versus Jacobson Products Co. I'll post a link to all these two, by the way, for you guys. And that case held that Single colors alone can sometimes serve as valid trademarks. And we know this from that Tiffany's blue box in my Tiffany's episode. If you guys want to go back to that one too, I discussed that. These marks can be protectable where the trademark holder can show that consumers associate the color with their brand and the mark isn't purely decorative. It's kind of like picture a color that acts as a logo. So Louboutin obviously was not happy with the outcome of the district court where the judge sided with Saint Laurent, and they appealed the case on September 5th in 2012. Louboutin versus Yves Saint Laurent went to the second United States Court of Appeals for the second district. Now the judge in the appellate case used that Qualitex case decision, the one that I just discussed, and the Second Circuit performed an analysis into that secondary meaning, which Louboutin alleged that he had acquired in those red soles. So they looked at marketing materials that Louboutin used, different media coverage, his commercials, his ads in magazines, for example. They looked at how many sales Louboutin had, and they held that the red Louboutin soles have in fact acquired secondary meaning, but only when the red sole is in contrast with the remainder of the shoe. Now that's a really important distinction here. The court also said that they analyzed trademark infringement claims in two stages. First, the court looks to see whether a plaintiff's mark merits protection. Of course, the mark has to be distinctive. We just discussed that. And then they kind of, again, talked about that secondary meaning in the public mind and whether the mark has acquired that secondary meaning. So the Second Circuit then ordered the United States Patent and Trademark Office to amend that red sole trademark, the one I discussed that they got in 2008. So it just applies to situations where the red sole contrasts with the remainder of the shoe. So this was a really interesting holding. Basically means that Saint Laurent can technically sell a shoe that's all red, including a red sole, but as soon as you make that shoe black with a red sole, that's where that trademark protection comes in. Now, at the top of the episode, I promised you guys a rundown of some international lawsuits that Louboutin Fashion House was involved with. So there's one in Belgium, Louboutin versus Dr. Adams Footwear. Allegedly, Dr. Adams had shoes with a red sole. The top was allegedly a different color than the sole. In 2013, Louboutin filed a trademark claim in the court in Brussels. However, the court declared the trademark invalid. That decision was then overturned by the Brussels Court of Appeal, and they stopped the sale of the shoes. So similar holding here as to the Saint Laurent. Then we have a 2012 case in the Netherlands, which was based on a shoe retailer called Van Haren, and they were selling a red-soled shoe that they called Fifth Avenue by Halle Berry. I'm assuming Halle Berry was involved in that. The District Court of Hague proposed in 2015 to ask questions to the European Court of Justice that they considered necessary in order to determine whether the red sole trademark would be valid. And then in June of 2018, the European Court ruled that a trademark of color to be placed on a sole could be valid. So Louboutin, another win for him there. Switzerland, he had a bit of a setback. The Swiss Federal Institute of Intellectual Property rejected Louboutin's trademark extension to Switzerland in 2011, and they considered the trademark was invalid. The Swiss Federal Supreme Court confirmed the invalidity of the trademark in Switzerland in 2017. So that kind of goes to show you how every country has their own, you know, slightly different holdings in trademark law and intellectual property in general. And that concludes this episode. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. It really means a lot to me. And please stay tuned soon for episode 11 of season 4 of the Fashion Law Network podcast. Thank you.